This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Sound off for Chesterfield. Chesterfield is best for you. First cigarette with premium quality in both regular and king size. Chesterfield brings you Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A suspect has been apprehended. You have a positive identification from the victim. Your job, investigate.
Years ahead of them all.
Chesterfield is years ahead of them all.
The quality contrast between Chesterfield and other leading brands is a revealing story.
Recent chemical analyses give an index of good quality for the country's six leading cigarette brands. The index of good quality table, which is a ratio of high sugar to low nicotine, shows Chesterfield quality highest.
Chesterfield quality highest.
15% higher than its nearest competitor.
Chesterfield quality highest.
31% higher than the average of the five other leading brands.
Yes, Chesterfield is first with premium quality in both regular and king size.
Don't you want to try a cigarette with a record like this? Chesterfield.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, June 3rd. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. I was on my way into the office, and it was 7:46 a.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery.
Joe?
Yeah?
You're early.
Yeah. I got to run over to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital.
What's the matter?
I don't know, Frank. I started to get headaches last night. I couldn't sleep. A ringing in my ears. I don't know what it is.
Now, hold on. Stay right there.
What?
Just got up my locker. I'll get it for you.
What are you talking about?
The headaches. Get worse when you move.
What?
When you move around, it gets worse, right?
Yeah.
Feels like your head's going to blow up?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Glad you came to me. I know just what it is. Got stuff right up here. Someplace. Yeah, here it is. There you are, Joe. Take two. Fix you right up.
What is it?
Salt.
Salt?
Salt. That's your trouble. You don't get enough salt. Same thing happened to me last summer. Ever since then, I always keep a bottle of salt tablets right in my locker. Always ready. Take two. Fix you right up.
Well, I don't know. You got a penny?
What for? A cup? Now, wait a minute, Joe. We're not going to drink that water anymore.
No?
Just a minute. Bought a whole case of this for us. There you are, boy. Drink it right out of the bottle.
What is it?
Poland water, Joe. 100% pure. Right from the springs. Real water.
Yeah?
Yep. Read right there on the bottle, see? Not carbonated. Full of minerals and good things.
Yeah, well, Frank, maybe I ought to wait and see the doctor, huh?
Joe, believe me, I know what's wrong. It's happened to me. Same thing. Salt, that's what you need.
Yeah.
Well, there you are. Poland water and the pills fix you right up. There you are. Go ahead.
Oh, look, I appreciate all this, really I do, but I think I ought to see the doctor, huh?
Joe, don't you trust me?
Well, yeah.
Take the pills.
Salt.
Salt, take them.
All right.
There now, that wasn't bad, was it? If the headaches don't go away, we can drop by Georgia Street and see the doc. Oh, you want to give me the bottle? I'll put the cap back on. Keep
yeah,
it fresh for
all right. Us. Anything in the box?
Yeah, an arrest report. We're supposed to check the guy out.
Anything on it?
Held up a grocery store at the corner of 7th and Francis a week ago yesterday.
When'd they pick him up?
Last night. Victim saw him on the street and called a radio car, took him into custody, and then booked him.
Well, let's go talk to him. I'll see what he's got to say.
After we get through, we can drop by the hospital if he's still got the headaches. It shouldn't take too long.
Well?
Sure, guy's already confessed.
We ran the name of the suspect, Thomas Stanford, through R&I, but we found no previous criminal record for anyone of his description. 8:10 a.m., we drove over to the main jail. We went up to the second floor and signed in. Stanford was brought from his cell, and Frank and I took him to one of the interview rooms. We gave him a cigarette, and he started to talk. He was quiet and cooperative.
Yeah, I did the robbery. A week ago yesterday.
I'd like to check some things out here on the arrest report.
Sure, I want to get this over with. I did it like I told you. Nothing special. Just held up the store.
Mm-hmm. Your full name is Thomas Arthur Stanford, is that right?
Yeah, Thomas Arthur. My friends call me Tom.
Your home address is 1824 and a quarter South Mariposa Avenue?
Yeah, I live with my father, 1824 and a quarter South Mariposa Avenue, LA7.
What's your father's name?
Arthur, same as my middle name. I was named after him.
You employed?
Not regular.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't have a regular job like in a factory or a store. I'm a gardener. I work for different people.
Can you give us a list of the people you work for?
I'm sure if you got to have them.
It's just routine.
Oh, yeah, I'll give them to you.
You want to tell us how you committed the robbery?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Isn't much to tell, though. It's pretty simple. I went in and held the place up, took the money. That's about all there is to it.
Were you armed when you went into that grocery store?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a gun.
What kind of a gun?
.32 automatic. Had 8 bullets in it.
Where's the gun now?
Threw it away.
Where?
In one of the ponds up in Ferndale.
You mean up in Griffith Park?
Yeah, just a little up the canyon there.
You want to show us where it is?
Sure.
All right. If you start right at the beginning, tell us all about the robbery, what you did.
Why do you have to know all that? I told you I did it. There's nothing more you have to know.
We've got to have it for the record. It's just routine, like I told you.
You guys do a lot of things. It's routine, don't you?
Yeah, we do, quite a bit.
Was there anybody in the store when you went in?
Just the woman that owned the place. I guess she owned it. The way she carried on, you'd have thought it was her own money I was taking. Well, I took out the gun and I told her it was a stick-up. I said for her not to cause any trouble.
What'd she say to that?
Well, that's when she got hacked at me, started to yell.
What'd you do?
I guess she figured I meant what I said when I told her to shut up. Anyway, she quieted down, then I told her to get into the back room. They got this little room where they keep the empty Coke and the beer bottles. I told her to get in there.
Did she?
Yeah, she went into the room, and I locked the door from the outside, and I went to the cash register and punched the no-sale button and took the money. After that, I left the store.
You didn't have the money on you when they picked you up last night. Where is it?
It's gone. I spent it.
You spent it all?
Yeah, every last nickel. I had myself a ball.
You remember where you spent it?
Around, different places. I bought myself some clothes, spent some of it in clubs. Just went. None of it left.
You drive a car, Stanford?
Yeah. Isn't mine, though. It belongs to my father. It's a big Chrysler sedan.
Did you drive that when you held up the grocery store?
Yeah, I had it parked down the street on 7th.
Mm-hmm. Remember the time when you went into the store?
Yeah. It was just after 12 noon.
What were you doing in the neighborhood last night?
You mean when they picked me up?
That's right.
Just looking around.
You ever been arrested before?
No, never been mixed up with a cop.
You ever been to the hospital, mental institution?
What do you ask a question like that for?
Routine.
Oh. Well, when I was a kid, I had my tonsils out. I was in a hospital in a couple of days. I don't remember it too well. It was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. How old are you, Stanford?
28. All these questions you're asking me, I told the two cops that picked me up the same things. Why you got to ask them again? Can't you just send me to the penitentiary and get it over with?
Got to double-check the story, Stanford.
I suppose so. It seems that you're going to a lot of trouble you don't have to. I told you I did it. I'm not giving you any trouble, I confess.
No.
My father know about this yet?
Yeah, he was called.
He's going to be pretty sore about it.
All right.
Sure, he doesn't know I used his car.
...9:15 a.m. We checked the suspect out of the main jail and took him over to the store that had been robbed. While Frank waited in the car, I went in and talked to the victim, a Mrs. Alice Kenwood. I told her that we'd bring the suspect into the store and ask him several questions about the robbery. During that time, I told her that we wanted her to observe the suspect so that she could give us a positive identification. I told her that it would be better if she didn't talk to him and that if she had any questions, she could ask them through us. She agreed and said that she would do anything she could to help us in the investigation. I went out to the car and Frank and I brought the suspect into the store.
Come on back here, Stanford.
What are you bringing me here for? What are you trying to prove?
I'd like to have you explain a few things for us.
Well, I told you all I could. I told you I committed the robbery. Isn't that enough?
Just a couple of things we'd like to have you clear up for us.
Well, what things? I told you how I did it. Well, she'll tell you. That's the woman I held up. She'll tell you it was me. She should know. She's the one who turned me in.
How about it, Miss Cameron?
He's the one, all right. I'd know him any place.
There, isn't that enough? What more do you want?
I'd like to have you show us just how you came into the store, what you did while you were in here.
You mean the whole thing?
Yeah, from the time he came in through the door.
All right. Take these handcuffs off and I'll show you.
You can show us with them on.
It's got to be that way. It's going to make it tougher.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I came in the door. I came in and she was standing behind that counter.
You mean Ms. Kenwood?
Yeah, her. She was standing behind the counter. I walked over to her. I showed her the gun. Told her it was a stick-up. Told her I wanted the money.
That's right. He pointed the gun at me. I thought he was going to shoot.
All right. Go ahead, Stanley.
Well, she started to yell, told me to get out of the store.
Certainly I yelled at him. You think I want anybody coming in here and waving a gun around? Oh, if my husband was here, he'd show you good.
See what I mean? I never saw a woman that could yell so much.
Go ahead, Stanford. What'd you do then?
Well, I told her if she didn't keep quiet, I'd have to shoot her, and then I told her to get in the room
now,
and back.
Now, just hold on a minute. He's not only a thief, but he's a liar, too.
Ma'am?
That's not what he did at all.
What do you mean, Mrs. Kenwood?
He didn't tell me to get into the back room. There ain't any back room.
How about that, Stanford?
You're going to listen to her? I'm the one that robbed the place. She didn't. I guess I know what I did.
All right, let's take a look back here. Come on. What's behind this curtain here, Miss Kenwood?
Just a little space where I keep my empty bottles. Goes right out onto the alley.
Yeah, see, that's where I put her. That's where I told her to stay.
Mm-hmm. And you said you locked the door. There's no door there.
I got confused. It doesn't make any difference. I told her to get back there and stay there until I was out of the store.
That's a lie. You did no such thing. You told me to get down on the floor and cover my face. Then you went over to the cash register and you took the money. I didn't move. Didn't want to give you any trouble the way you were waving that gun around. It's a wonder you didn't try to kill me.
Well, you're yakking it up. I should have done it.
All right, that's enough. Frank?
Yeah?
You want to take Stanford out of the car? I'll be right with you.
Yeah, okay. Come on, Stanford, let's go.
I know what you got to go through all this for. I told you I did, and I never saw anything like it before. You can't even confess around here. Nobody believes you.
Miss Kenwood?
Yes, officer.
Are you sure that's the man that held you up here?
I said it before. I'm positive. There isn't any doubt in my mind.
Uh-huh. You heard what he said, how he said he robbed you. Is that the way it happened?
Well, everything was the same except where he said that he put me in back there. That wasn't true. He made me lie down on the floor right there. Told me to stay still for 5 minutes, not to move. Said that if I caused any trouble, he'd come back and shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's crazy. Anybody would wave a gun around like that. It's terrible. I wish my husband was here. He'd show that snip. He's in the army, you know, my husband.
Yes, ma'am.
Awful thing. Him overseas getting shot at and young punks like that roaming around the streets with guns, threatening people. It's a terrible thing.
Now, this is pretty important, ma'am. I want to ask you once more. You're sure that's the man who held you up?
How many times do I have to say it? I told you that it is. He admits it himself. What more do you need?
Well, I don't know, ma'am. There's just something here that isn't right about the whole thing.
Doesn't make any difference. He's the man. There's no mistake about that. Oh, you just let me know when you want me in court. I'll be there. I want to see him get what's coming to him, every bit of it.
Yes, ma'am. So do we, if he's the right man. Twelve twenty-two p.m. We drove the suspect back to the city hall for further questioning. Frank took him to the interrogation room, and I checked into the squad room.
Pardon me?
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Friday?
Yes, sir. Something I can do for you?
I'm Arthur Stanford, Tom's father.
Oh, yes, sir.
I understand my son is here. Is that right?
Yes, sir. He's here.
Wonder if I could see him, talk to him?
Yes, sir. I think that can be arranged.
Has he told you why he did it? Has he?
Well, he's given us some reasons, sir. None of them are very good.
I can't understand it. Just isn't any reason for him to do a thing like this. No reason at all that I can see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do, Mr. Friday. I left the house this morning and all the people in the neighborhood knew about it. They all knew. I walked down the street and they turned away from me. I could see them watch me through the windows of their houses. I could tell what they were thinking. My son's a thief. Common thief. And in my heart, I know it's true. I don't know what to do about it, Mr. Friday. Can you tell me?
No, sir, I'm afraid I can't.
Well, maybe he can. May I see him?
Yes, sir, he's across the hall. This way. Right over here, sir.
I wonder if I could have a cigarette?
Yes, sir. Here you are. Here's a match.
Thank you. I'm not sure what I'm going to say to him when I see him. Wish I had some time to think.
Well, you don't have to go in now if you don't want to, sir.
Oh, it wouldn't help any to put it off. Won't get any easier with time. I might as well get it over with.
All right, sir.
Hi, Pop.
Why'd you do it, son?
Well, I did it because I wanted to. I wanted the money. I didn't know any other reason you robbed somebody. I wanted the money, so I did it.
You could have come to me. I'd have tried to get the money for you. You know I'd have tried.
Where'd you get it? Where'd you get that kind of money? All your life, you've been grubbing for pennies. I don't want small money. I want to be rich. I will be, too.
All right, take it easy, Stanford.
It's all right, Mr. Friday. I understand.
All my life, you've been saying you understand. I'm getting sick of it. As long as I can remember, you've been telling me to get out and do something on my own. Well, I finally did it. Now you aren't happy with it.
You expect me to throw my head up in the air because you're a thief?
Oh, knock it off. I'm tired of you giving me lectures all the time. Yakety-yak. Never stop.
That's enough of that, don't you think, Stan?
Well, you keep out of this, cop. This is a family matter. It doesn't concern you. This is between my father and me.
Well, tell me why. That's all I want. Why? Tell me so I can face the neighbors, so I can tell them you had a reason.
Tell them your son's a bum.
Well, they know that already, but that's not a reason to steal.
It's good enough for me. They're not going to listen to you anyway. They already made up their minds about me. They did that a long time ago.
Come on, Stanford. Let's go back to jail.
Sure. Anything else here to do? He never understood. He never did. Let's go.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to ask first.
What's that?
You're going to jail for a long time. I have to live while you're gone.
It's your worry.
Well, it always has been. I want to know what you did with the gardening tools. I'll have to have them to get along.
I don't know. I left him someplace.
You remember where? Think. I need those tools.
I'm not sure. Maybe at Mrs. Howard's. Maybe that's where I left.
Over on 12th?
Yeah, I did her place last Wednesday. I guess I forgot to pick stuff up when I left. It must still be there.
And I'll go over and get them.
Wait a minute.
What do you want?
You said you did some gardening for this Mrs. Howard last Wednesday. That'd be a week ago yesterday, is that right?
That's what I said.
You remember what time you were there?
Most of the day. I got there about 10 in the morning. Left about 4 in the afternoon. I was in a hurry to get away. That's why I forgot the tools, I guess.
You leave the place at all during the day?
Not till I finished. What are you trying to prove with all these questions?
It's about the robbery, Stanford.
Yeah?
If you were at this Howard woman's house, how could you held up the grocery store?
It'll make no difference how I did it. I don't have to explain it to you.
No, you're wrong about that, Stanford.
Is that right?
Too many things here don't add up. The way you confessed. The difference in your story about the robbery. Now, this thing about you being at the Howard house. I don't know why you're lying about this, Stanford.
Yeah.
But we're going to find out.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action. Chesterfield is best for you. Listen to Chesterfield's record. For a full year and 2 months, a doctor has been making regular examinations of a group of Chesterfield smokers, and he reports no adverse effects to the nose, throat, and sinuses from smoking Chesterfields. Don't you want to try a cigarette with a record like this? Chesterfield. First with premium quality in both regular and king size. Chesterfield. First choice with Young America, and that's from a survey of 274 colleges and universities. Try Chesterfield's today. Remember, Chesterfield is America's best cigarette buy.
We continued to talk to the suspect, Thomas Stanford, for another hour. He refused to say anything about the conflicting aspects of his story. His father pleaded with him to tell us the truth, but other than admitting he was responsible for the grocery store robbery, he'd say nothing. We got the address of the house where Stanford had said he'd left the gardening tools. 3:15 p.m. After taking the suspect back to the main jail, Frank and I drove out to talk to the Howard woman.
Place sure looks nice. Well kept.
Yeah.
Look at those carnations, Joe. Ever seen anything so pretty?
Yeah, they're very nice.
You know, Faye tries them all the time. Never seems to have any luck with them, though. Plants come up all right, but the flowers just don't seem to get very big.
Mm-hmm.
About size of half a buck. Little bitty things.
Yeah.
Sure smell good, though.
I'll get the bell.
Yes?
Ms. Howard?
That's right. Is there something you want?
Police officers, ma'am. We'd like to talk to you.
Policeman? What do you want to see me for?
Well, it's about a man who did some work for you, Thomas Stanford.
Oh, yes, come in, won't you?
Thank you very much. My name's Friday, Mrs. Howard. This is my partner, Frank Smith.
Well, how do you do?
How do you do, ma'am?
Just sit down there. I'm having a late lunch. Can I get you anything?
No, thank you.
No, thank you, ma'am.
Sure you wouldn't have a glass of iced tea or something like that?
No, thanks, Mrs. Howard. How about this man, Stanford?
Oh, yes, Tom. He's a good gardener. Does a beautiful job on the place. You should take a walk around the grounds. He keeps it just beautifully.
Yes, ma'am. Could you tell us when he was here last?
Oh, well, I'd have to think about that. Let's see. Well, I think it was a week ago yesterday. Yes, that's right. Last Wednesday. He comes once a week. He should have been here yesterday. Called his house when he didn't show up. No answer. Probably forgot. He's very forgetful, you know.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. But take the last time he was here. He walked off and forgot all of his tools. Lawnmower, clippers, everything. Had to take it back to the garage. Just left it on the lawn right out in front of the place.
Mm-hmm. You ever had any trouble with him?
What do you mean by trouble?
Well, any arguments, disagreements?
Well, on a couple of occasions, we've had words about what flowers to put in. He's wanted to plant one thing, I've wanted something else. They've never been serious, though.
Yes, ma'am.
I suppose I shouldn't say this.
What's that, Miss Hart?
Well, frankly, I've never thought that Tom was real bright. He seemed sort of backwards.
How do you mean, backward?
Well, when it came to thinking out something for himself, he just couldn't handle it.
If you told him to do a thing a certain way, he'd do it. Never vary from the way you told him.
Mm-hmm.
But ask him to figure something out, and he was dead. Seemed like the motor was turning over all right, but he just couldn't get the clutch out. Gears just wouldn't work.
Yes, ma'am.
That's why I say I don't think he's very bright. He just can't seem to think for himself. No initiative.
Do you remember what time he was here on Wednesday?
Well, now, let's see. He got here about 10 in the morning. It was right after that radio show about the Friends. I'd just finished listening to that when he got here. That goes off the air at 10. Have you ever heard it?
No, ma'am.
Oh, you should listen sometime. These people tell why they need a friend to help them out of trouble. Well, I listen to it every morning. It makes me feel pretty lucky, those poor people. I sure appreciate what I've got when I hear what they have to say.
Uh-huh. Was Stanford here all day, ma'am?
Yes, all day. He didn't leave until, let's see. Well, I guess it was about 5, someplace around in there. It seems to me it was just before the 5 o'clock news, just before that when he left.
You say he got here at 10, and then he left just before 5 o'clock, is that right?
That's right.
Any chance that he might have been away without you knowing it?
No, no, I'd have known it if he had. He was out in the backyard most of the morning, and then he took care of the front later in the day.
And what's he do about lunch, Miss Howard?
What do you mean?
Well, does he bring his lunch with him?
Once in a while he does, yes. Well, he didn't on Wednesday, though. I'm sure about that.
How do you mean, Mrs. Howard?
Well, along about lunchtime, was right after the noon news, I made up a little plate for him. A couple of sandwiches, potato chips, and some pickles. Little tiny sweet gherkins. I made it up and I took it out to him.
Yes, ma'am.
I took this nice plate out to him, and where do you suppose I found him?
Where?
Out behind the garage, sitting next to the compost box. What do you suppose he was doing?
What, ma'am?
Reading a comic book. All about cops and robbers. One of those with a picture on the cover of the crooks trying to shoot their way out of the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I told him that he'd better get on the ball, let the clutch out, and get to work. I told him that I wanted the yard finished up by 5, and that I didn't want any funny business about it.
What did he say to that?
Well, he just looked at me for a long time, and then he said, "Okay, Warden." Just like that. "Okay, Warden." But he got to work right away, and he finished up on time. You see, my son and daughter-in-law were coming over. It was his birthday, and we'd planned a little party. I wanted the place to be nice for them.
Yes, ma'am, we understand. Is it possible that Stanford could have gotten away from the yard at all between 10 and 5?
No. No, I'm sure of that. He was here all the time.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much.
What's this all about? Is Tom in some sort of trouble?
No, it's just a routine investigation, Miss Howard. I'm going to give you our card in case you think of anything else. Here you are.
Oh, thank you. Michigan 5211, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Ask for robbery division. That's extension 2511. It's right on the card.
Oh, yes. Poor Tom, all this trouble. It's too bad.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wish this was New York.
Beg your pardon?
Well, if this was New York, everything would be all right.
How's that?
That program about the Friends?
Yes, ma'am.
Tom could sure use one.
We left Mrs. Howard's home and talked to some of the people in the neighborhood. They told us that the Howards were respected people in the community, and some of them verified the fact that Stanford had worked for almost 2 years. The man who lived directly across the street from the Howard house said that he'd talked with Stanford on the afternoon of the robbery. He said that he'd asked the suspect about the seeds that he used to raise the carnations that were planted along the front of the house. He went on to say that he'd been working in the front yard of his own house all afternoon and that he'd seen the suspect throughout that time. We drove back to the grocery store and talked with the victim, Mrs. Kenwood. Under questioning, she admitted that she could have made a mistake about the identification, but she said that if she was wrong, the thief could act as a double for Tom Stanford. 10:30 p.m. We drove back to the main jail and picked up the suspect. We took him back to the city hall and talked to him in the interrogation room. He was sullen and refused to answer our questions.
Stanford?
Yeah?
I'd like to have you tell us the truth this time.
I told you it isn't my fault. If you don't believe me, it isn't my fault.
Now look, Stanford, we talked with this Mrs. Howard. She told us that you were working for her all day a week ago Wednesday.
So what's that prove?
Well, you admit it's true then, huh?
Sure it's true. I was working for
her. Then how could you have gotten to the grocery store and held it up? Stanford?
I did it. I haven't got anything more to say. I did the robbery. Smith, you get tonight's papers?
Yeah, I picked them up earlier.
Anything in them about me?
I didn't see anything.
There must have been something, some story about me with my name.
Well, if there was, I didn't see it.
Well, maybe it didn't look good.
Maybe.
There's got to be something, a picture or something.
No.
Well, let me look.
Where'd you leave the papers, Frank?
Squad room.
Would you get them and let me look?
Sure.
Pretty important to you that you're in the papers, isn't it?
I just want to see him, that's all.
Well, he'll bring him back.
You must have made a mistake. There's something about me. There's got to be. It isn't every day there's a robbery like this. The papers would write it up big, wouldn't they?
I don't know.
Well, sure they would. There was a story when the place was robbed, told all about how it was done. It was just a little story, but now they've got me, it seems you should have a picture.
Here it is.
Let me see. Nothing on the first page.
Robbery happened a week ago. It's old news.
Yeah, but you just caught me last night. Nothing. Not one lousy word. Nothing at all.
It makes a difference, doesn't it?
Sure it does. Sure. If there isn't anything in the papers, how are people going to know I did it? How are they going to know?
They won't.
But they got to. They got to. Don't you see that? If they don't know that I did the robbery, there ain't no reason for it. No reason at all.
What do you mean, Stafford?
Well, there won't be no pictures, no nothing. People still think I'm nobody. No one's going to know that I did do something. No one will know.
Well, the way it looks to us, you didn't do it.
There should be a story about it, about how I confessed. Maybe not a picture, but at least a story, something.
You didn't do it, did you? Stafford? Come on, you didn't hold up that story, did you?
No. No, I didn't. I thought I could get away with it. I thought that if I confessed, you'd put me in jail and people would look at me different. And they wouldn't laugh at me anymore because I'd done something. Mm-hmm. Poor dumb Tom. That's what they say, poor dumb Tom. Just once I wanted to show him that I could do something.
You ready to go?
Back to the jail?
That's right.
You think we could stop on the way over and like to pick up something?
Yeah, what's that?
Other papers. Might be something in them.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On June 4th, a meeting was held in the District Attorney's Office, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that meeting.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. I'd like to talk to you people who don't smoke Chesterfields. I'm convinced that if you try just one carton, you'll find they're best for you. They're milder, they have a wonderful taste, and most important, they have premium quality in both sizes, regular or king size. So pick up that carton, will you? Chesterfields. Try them.
A 5.10 report was filed on Thomas Arthur Stanford, and he was released from custody. 10 months later, on May 22nd, James R. Rogers was apprehended while attempting to hold up a liquor store at the corner of 3rd and Temple Streets. While being interrogated, he confessed to committing the robbery that Stanford had been accused of. The physical appearance of the two men was almost identical. Rogers was tried and convicted of robbery in the first degree and received sentence as prescribed by law. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Virginia Gregg, Vic Perrin. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
For a million laughs, tune in Chesterfield's Martin and Lewis show Tuesday on this same NBC station. And sound off for Chesterfields. Either regular or king size, you'll find premium quality Chesterfields much milder. Chesterfield is best for you.
Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Now, new Fatima has the tip for your lips. Fatima tips of perfect cork. King size for natural filtering. Fatima quality for a much better flavor and aroma. So remember, new Fatima has the tip for your lips. Fatima. See how smooth they are.
Remember, Fatima is made by the makers of Chesterfield.
Tonight it's Adventure with Barry Craig on NBC.
Broadcasting System presents...
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Sentence of death. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is, Sentence of Death. The very intriguing story of a conflict that proved that justice was not blind. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. Paul Remsen was elected to the Supreme Court bench by the people of his county in November. He was sworn in January. And by April, he was already one of the most popular judges in the county. It was late afternoon. Court had adjourned for the day, and Judge Remsen was in chambers, putting some papers into his briefcase. Homework, he called it. When Senior Judge Graham Palmer walked in and sat down in the chair alongside Judge Remsen's desk.
What's the matter, Graham?
I'm glad you're still here, Paul. Have you heard the news about Sam Howard?
Why, no.
He had a stroke.
Oh, good Lord. How bad was it?
The doctor believes he'll be all right, but he'll have to rest a long time.
Oh, naturally, the longer the better.
Yes, but in the meantime, we have the problem of what to do with Sam's calendar. I phoned Allerton County to send us a judge, but, well, nothing doing until the middle of next week.
Well, now, if there's any part of Sam's work you'd like me to take over...
There is, Paul. A matter that's scheduled for tomorrow morning.
Oh, of course. What is it?
The People versus Martin Rivers.
Martin Rivers. Oh.
I know how you feel about such matters, and I do it myself, Paul, but the governor's appointed me to a special board of inquiry.
I know.
We start hearings the first thing in the morning.
Yes. Graham, I don't know if it's in me to send a man to his death.
Even if the law says you must?
But it's capital punishment, Graham. I've always been against it.
But it's the law, my friend. And you've taken an oath to uphold it.
Yes, but... There's...
Martin Rivers was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. The sentence of death is mandatory under the laws of this state.
I know that, Graham.
It's our duty to impose that sentence, whether we like it or not, until the law is changed.
Give me a chance to think about it, will you?
Of course. And if you should find that you can't go through with it...
I'll resign from the bench.
Nonsense. We need you.
No, Graham. I'll either do it or quit.
Paul?
Yes, Martha.
Hello, darling. Did you have an exciting day in court?
Yes. Pretty exciting.
A big day, too, if those bulges in your briefcase mean anything. Homework?
Maybe.
You sound like a very tired judge.
Let's go into the living room, Martha. I'd like to sit down.
You're worried about something, Paul?
Yes.
What is it?
Tomorrow morning, I've got to sentence a man to die.
You? But you didn't have a murder case.
It's Judge Howard's case. Howard's sick, and Graham Palmer's going to be tied up with that special board of inquiry. So...
Oh.
Martha, I don't know if I can do it.
Why?
Send a man to his death. Tell him when and how he's going to die.
Is this the man who was convicted last week? Martin Rivers?
Yes.
And you're worried about him?
Now, look, Martha,
please. He killed another man in cold blood, dear. His victim never had a chance to defend himself.
I know.
But the state gave Martin Rivers every chance to defend himself.
Martha.
Didn't it? He was given a fair trial and convicted. Now, there's nothing for you to be concerned about.
No. Nothing except my conscience. I order a man's death, and then I have to live with myself.
But, Paul, the man was a professional gangster. Heaven knows how many other people he's killed. Don't you think he should be punished?
Yes, I do. Send him away to prison for life. Take away all his rights and liberties. But what right have we got to take a life we didn't create?
What right did Martin Rivers have?
Well, he lived by another code, the underworld, the law of the jungle. Take what you want, kill or be killed.
You don't mean that, Paul.
No, I guess I don't. No one has the right to kill, no matter what his code might be. But where does that leave me? What do I do?
It's very simple. You have a sworn duty.
Yes. Maybe I took on more than I can handle.
What do you mean?
Becoming a judge, deciding for other people. Oh, I don't know. I'm too confused right now to even guess what it's all about.
Of course, dear. Why don't you go upstairs and lie down for a while?
No.
Dinner won't be ready for an hour. And a little rest will do you good.
I couldn't rest, Martha.
Well, try it anyway. I'll call you when dinner's ready.
Listen, dear, I couldn't...
Go ahead now. All great men have to make important decisions, Mr. Justice Remsen. You're no exception. Paul.
Oh, what is it, Martha?
Stop thinking about Martin Rivers and finish your...
I can't, Martha.
How can you feel pity for a cold-blooded killer?
Pity for Martin Rivers? As far as I'm concerned, he's finished. But he's a man, a human being, and I cannot pronounce a sentence of death. I cannot do it.
But, very well. What's the alternative?
I'll have to resign from the bench.
Oh, I know what the judgeship means to you.
Mm-hmm.
I know how hard you work to be elected.
Please, Martha.
How can you think so little of your life? Or of mine. Don't you realize you'd be called a quitter?
Martha, I don't know anything anymore. I'm going out for a walk. Do you mind?
No, dear. I don't mind.
I've got to work myself out of this dilemma. I've got to know what I'm going to do, and I've got to know tonight.
Judge Paul Remsen walked for a long time without giving a thought to where he was going. Then, as he went across Main Street, he had an idea. He got in a bus, and 10 minutes later, he was entering a small cigar store in one of the less pretentious neighborhoods.
Yes? What can I do for you, sir?
Let me have one of those cigars, please.
Right you are, sir. Nice weather we're having, isn't it?
Yes.
I always say, give me the spring. Not too cold, not too hot. It's better for business, too.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be 30 cents. Thank you. Yeah, not too cold, not too hot. Anything else, sir?
Are you Mr. Herrick?
Yeah, that's me. Say, I thought you looked familiar. You wouldn't be a Judge Remsen, would you?
Yes.
Well, what do you know? Yeah, I was one of the majority that put you in office.
Mr. Herrick, you were the foreman of the jury that convicted Martin Rivers of murder in the first degree.
Yes, sir. That no good gangster.
He's coming up for sentence in the morning. The death penalty.
That's what the law says.
Yes, I know. How do you feel about sending a man to his death?
How?
I'd like to know.
That's a funny question, Judge. Coming from a judge.
Forget that I'm a judge. We're talking man to man.
I don't get this, Judge.
Tomorrow morning, a human being will be sentenced to die. In anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months, depending on whether he appeals to a higher court. He'll be dead.
Yeah.
You're partly responsible for doing that to him.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Are you trying to make me feel like a murderer?
Oh, no, you're not a murderer, but... Do you feel now, a week after the trial, that you had a right to condemn another man to death?
He was a killer.
All right, but suppose, Mr. Herrick, you'd met Martin Rivers right after he'd committed the murder. Would you have killed him?
Say, what are you after?
Would you or wouldn't you?
Judge, would you mind telling me...
Please, Mr. Herrick, I've got to know.
Okay, the answer is no. I wouldn't have killed him. Not unless he tried to kill me.
Oh, but he didn't try.
Now, look, Judge, I don't know what this is all about, but I'm a member of society, a decent law-abiding citizen, and I pay taxes to see that lawbreakers like Martin Rivers get what's coming to them. I don't want him around.
Well, life imprisonment would have done the same thing, Mr. Harris.
No, not to my way of thinking. The fellow that killer shot didn't get a life sentence. He's dead. Now, maybe he was no good either, but that's got nothing to do with us. The law says that anyone who premeditates murder is... What am I doing telling you about the law? Oh, that's rich. Oh, I'm sorry, Judge, but it just struck me funny, that's all. Me telling a judge about the law.
Mr. Herrick, it may not be as funny as you think.
All right. You want to know how I feel? I think I can tell you. I've got no regrets about Martin Rivers or any other killer that's got to die. When I took the oath as a juror, I promised to keep an open mind and to bring in a verdict based on the evidence.
Yes.
That's exactly what I did. And I voted guilty on the first ballot. Now then, does that answer your question, Judge?
Yes. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, good night, Judge. Drop in again sometime. I promise I won't start telling you about the law. Me telling the judge about the law.
Good evening.
Hello, Dr. Benjamin.
Paul Remsen. Forgive me, I didn't recognize you. That street lamp behind you and my old eyes. Come in, won't you?
Thank you. How have you been, Doctor?
Oh, as well as an old man can be. But you, Paul, I'm proud of you.
Oh, thank you.
Come into my study. I was just in the midst of writing Sunday's sermon.
Oh?
But that can wait. A sermon can always wait. So few people take it seriously. So, make yourself comfortable, Paul.
Yes, thank you.
It's been weeks since we had a real visit. Being a judge keeps you pretty busy, doesn't it?
Yes.
Does it also leave you no time for happiness? You seem depressed, my boy.
More confused than depressed, Dr. Benjamin.
Tell me about it.
I've been given an assignment. A man's life. A criminal. He was found guilty of murder.
I see.
Oh, it's my duty to sentence him tomorrow morning. But I've...
You find that you can't do it?
I can't make up my mind.
Well, it's difficult.
I know it's my duty to pronounce that sentence. The man committed murder, cold-blooded, premeditated murder, and the law is explicit. But still, I can't get it out of my mind that in sentencing that man tomorrow, I'll be sentencing myself.
Why?
My... principles, the code of a lifetime. What right have I got to order the death of another man?
Well, the law gives you that right, Paul.
As a man, Pastor?
Do you want me to answer that?
No, it's something I'll have to decide for myself.
Then why did you come to me?
I want to talk. And I don't know where I can talk more freely than before you. I want to expose both sides of the case to myself in words that I can hear. There are two sides, Doctor. You know that.
Well, there may be.
Now, I'm a judge. I took an oath to uphold the law. The whole body of law, including the criminal code, the code of crime and punishment.
By man unto men.
Yes. But where did that law come from?
Yes.
It came from the Bible. Our whole concept of criminal law is based on the premise of an eye for an eye, a life for a life.
Yes, that's true, Paul, unfortunately. But there's a higher law, a moral law. And that too comes from the Bible, my son.
Yes.
Thou shalt not kill.
That's what I mean, Dr. Benjamin. Which law do I follow?
I can't answer that, Paul. I am a minister. My way of living is different from yours. I've taken an oath, too. But it's an oath to uphold the laws of God. If I had chosen another way of life, perhaps the laws of man would be more important to me than the word of God. I don't know. But I admire you greatly. You have mercy in your heart for a man who had no mercy.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, my son. Whatever you do, whatever decision you make, I'm sure you won't be less of a man. Oh, I'm sorry I can't do more to help you, Paul. But your soul is your own. No one can keep it for you while you're on this earth.
I know. Thanks, Doctor.
No. No thanks to me, son.
Well, I think I'll be going now. There's one more stop I've got to make. It might be the last.
What do you want?
Excuse me, I'm sorry to trouble you at this hour.
What do you want?
I'm Judge Remsen of the County Supreme Court. I'd like to come in for a moment, if I may.
Judge Remsen of the Supreme Court, but I...
Please, Mrs. Dover. Oh,
sure, come in. Sorry, you see, I wasn't expecting you, and the house is in an awful mess.
Oh, please don't apologize to me.
My daughter Mary went out and left everything for me to clean up. She always helps me, but tonight she... Judge, what do you want?
Your son, Frank, was killed by Martin Rivers 4 months ago.
You've come here to talk about Frank?
No. I've got to sentence Martin Rivers to die. Oh,
to die? Mother of... Well, do you think I ought to say no?
You can't stop it, Mrs. Dover. The law makes it compulsory. If I don't do it, another judge will.
He killed my boy.
If... You could say no. If you could stop the sentencing, would you do it?
You're asking me, Frank's mother?
I'm trying to make up my own mind, and I must know how you feel.
What good will it do me if that man dies? Will it bring back my son? Will it help me to sleep at night?
Is that how you really feel?
Well, will it?
You would keep him alive, wouldn't you, if you could?
Let him live?
If you could.
Why didn't he let Frank live? He killed him.
But...
All right. Frank was no good. He told lies. He beat people. He was a gangster with a gun in his pocket. He slept all day and all night he was out.
Oh, no.
Lord.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Dover.
Oh, well, maybe he was a thief, too. But for that, you don't deserve to die, to be murdered. No one has a right to kill.
No one, Mrs. Dover. Is that what you really feel?
Oh, how can I say what I feel, Judge? I brought up 2 children. One's gone. One night he said to me, "So long, Mama." He went out. And the police came, told me he was dead, a bullet. How do I feel now, Judge? Oh, who can say when there's so much pain?
But do you want revenge? Do you want Martin Rivers to pay with his life for what he did to your son?
Martin Rivers, he doesn't mean anything to me, whether he lives or dies. I don't hate him, though. He killed my Frank, but I don't hate him. I'm sorry for people that kill. That's how I feel when I'm not mixed up. I've lost my boy, but... Oh, no. I don't want to kill.
I think that's how most of us feel when we're not mixed up. Good night, ma'am. You've been a great help.
Judge Paul Remsen went home and he went to bed. But he didn't sleep. All night the words he had heard, the opinions expressed by the different people, kept running through his mind. He couldn't sleep.
The sentence is mandatory, Paul. It's our duty to impose that sentence until the law is changed.
He was given a fair trial and convicted. That's more than the man he killed got, Paul.
He was a killer, Judge. I pay taxes to see that killers like Martin Rivers get what's coming to them. I did my duty as a juror and a citizen. My duty.
Yes, Paul. An eye for an eye, a life for a life. But there's a higher law, a moral law. And that too comes from the Bible. Thou shalt not kill.
Oh, what good will it do me if that man dies? I've lost my boy, but I don't want to kill. That's how I feel when I'm not mixed up.
Your career. Now you want to throw it away because of some silly notion. How can you think so little of your life? You'll be called a quitter.
It's your duty, Paul.
The law, Judge. Our duty.
Your duty, dear.
Duty? Duty? What am I going to do? What?
Well, Paul?
I don't...
No yet, Martha.
Are you going to court this morning?
Yes.
Well, that's something.
It may be the last time.
I'm going with you.
Martha.
Don't you think I should go?
I'd rather you wouldn't. It's my problem.
And mine? I promise not to interfere, Paul. Whatever you do will be all right with me.
Will it?
Don't you believe me?
You understand, then?
I think so.
I hope so, dear. Now let's go downstairs and have some breakfast. Come in.
Excuse me, Judge.
Yes. What is it, Henry?
I just looked in to see if everything was all right with you, Judge. It's pretty near 11 o'clock.
Hmm? Come in, Henry. Close the door.
Yes. The courtroom's kind of crowded with lawyers waiting for things to get started, Your Honor.
Yes.
Not that I give a hoot and holler about them, but we're an hour behind schedule, and that means we finish up late this afternoon.
Did you see Mrs. Remsen out there?
Oh, yes, right in the first row with the spectators. Do you want me to send her in here?
Where's Martin Rivers?
Huh?
Martin Rivers.
Well, they've got him in the detention room. He's waiting, too.
Of
course, he's in no hurry. What's the matter, Judge? You worried about him?
It's about him. And about me, too.
Yeah. I sort of figured it was that business that was keeping you in chambers so long.
Henry, how long have you been a clerk in this courtroom?
Well, near 40 years.
You've seen many judges and many murderers. You've heard the sentence of death pronounced many times.
Enough.
Have you ever thought how you would feel if you had to pronounce that sentence?
Uh-huh.
Could you do it?
Well, maybe not, so long as I was me.
I see.
But if I was a judge, it wouldn't make any difference.
Oh? Why not?
Well, a judge isn't a man, Your Honor. He isn't human.
Henry, is this something new?
No, sir. It's as old as history. A judge has got no right to be human. And that means he's got no right to work with his heart.
I see what you mean, but where would you draw the line between the man and the judge?
That black robe you're wearing, that does it.
Hmm?
When you put on that black robe and go out there into the courtroom and get up on that bench, you stop being a man. You become that robe, the law, the symbol everybody respects or is afraid of.
Hmm.
Why do people have to stand up when the judge comes into this courtroom?
The symbol? The black robe?
It isn't because they respect the man that's wearing that robe. Maybe they do, and maybe they don't. That's a personal matter. But they stand up for the robe. They've got to. It's the will of the people.
The black robe.
And that's how you've got to look at it, Judge. There's nothing personal in what you do when you're wearing that robe. Why? Because you're not in it.
What's that?
Not you as Paul Remsen. What's in that robe is a book that was written down at the state capitol a long time ago. The law. That's the will of the people, too, Your Honor.
But a man must be sentenced to death.
Did he sentence another guy to death?
Yes.
And did he execute that sentence?
Yes, but...
Well, then there's no two ways about it. The book says he's got to die. And the book says the robe's got to tell him so. That's all there is to it.
Yes, I know, but is it right?
Is it? Well, ask the book and the robe.
Yeah.
Well, Judge, are you ready?
Ready? Yes, I'm ready. Let's go.
The clerk will call the business of the day.
People versus Martin Rivers. Bring the prisoner to the bar.
Would counsel for this man like to say a few words? No.
But the court realizes that counsel cannot say anything to affect sentence. But, Martin, I would like to say a few words to you. Martin, I'm about to say isn't easy for me. I hope you'll realize that. And I hope you'll do me a personal service, and yourself, too. There's a chaplain at the state prison, a fine, understanding man. I've known him for a long time. Let him counsel you. Let him talk to you. And please, Martin, listen to him. He can do you a lot of good. He'll give you peace. Peace of mind and perhaps peace in your heart.
What is it, Judge? Assignment from the bench? You're trying to soften me up? Okay, give me the works and let's get out of here. I know it's coming to me, and there's nothing you can do to change it. So try to book at me. Wise guy.
Martin Rivers, you have been convicted by a jury of murder in the first degree. The sentence of this court is that you shall be delivered into the custody of the sheriff of this county at once, and by him delivered into the custody of the warden of the state prison, where one night during the week of May 14th you shall be put to death in the manner prescribed by the laws of this state. And may God have mercy on your soul. And may God have mercy on my soul, too.
And so closes tonight's story, Sentence of Death. Stedman Coles wrote the radio script. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Raymond Edward Johnson played the part of Judge Paul Renson, and the cast included Helen Shields, Maurice Franklin, Irene Hubbard, Bill Smith, Ed Latimer, and Murray Forbes. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have the very exciting story of a nightmare that was as real as murder. It's called Cupid Can Be Deadly. In the meantime? Well, in the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we look for you next week? Oh, yes. Here's something important. The horrible suffering and tragedy of a cancer death can be avoided in many instances. The American Cancer Society wants you to know that of all the people who die of cancer, it is possible to save from 30 to 50%. Protect yourself by getting a free booklet which tells of the 7 danger signals and many other important facts on cancer. Address your request for this information to the American Cancer Society, New York 4, New York. The American Cancer Society, New York 4, New York.
This program came from New York. Stay tuned now for another mutual favorite, Quiet Please, which follows in just a moment. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.